Hello, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, I'm your host, Evan Sutter, joined by co-host Brendan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at eSutter. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanClean14. Also, make sure to follow our Locked On Suns Twitter page at Locked On PHX Suns. Your support is much appreciated. I know in our last two episodes this week, Brendan, you weren't there on Wednesday for Wes Goldberg for the Goran Dragic mock negotiation, but on Monday, we did one with Chris Manning of Locked On Cavs for a George Hill mock negotiation. And today, we're going to kind of continue that a little bit because we have still a lot more options we have to go through. I think that going through all the rest of five or six of these guys would take another week or so. So we're just going to knock them all out today, just me and you going back and forth. And those five guys are Terry Rozier of the Boston Celtics, Corey Joseph of the Indiana Pacers, Kemba Walker of the Charlotte Hornets, Patrick Beverley of the Los Angeles Clippers, and Spencer Dinwiddie of the Brooklyn Nets. We're going to go one through five as far as the possibility of them being moved and what we'd possibly give up in such a deal, and if the opposing team would do such a deal or not. So, Brent, before we get into that, I wanted to get your thoughts really quickly on the Goran Dragic trade from Wednesday that I did with Wes. Do you think that the deal we agreed upon, which was a future first-round pick protected in 2019, most likely will convey in 2020, for Goran Dragic and Tyson Chandler and Darrell Arthur's expiring contract?
I think it's probably pretty close to what might happen. I don't like giving up a first round pick in any situation in the Suns rebuild, but you know, we're facing a reality where that is going to have to be the piece, especially in some of the guys we're talking about today. Hill and maybe even Dragic, you could have argued maybe aren't worth it from a talent and age perspective, but you know, the one thing I do want to highlight before we get into this is kind of along the lines of what ended up happening with the Heat negotiations is the Suns are in a position where they don't have a ton of leverage. There's certain teams that are operating at a similar place. I think the Clippers come to mind. We'll talk about that with Patrick Beverley, where they probably have even less negotiation leverage than we do in Phoenix, but the Suns don't have a lot. So giving up more than it seems like maybe they should, or more than, you know, another team might have to, I think that's something that Suns fans should accept, because the whole entire basketball world knows the Suns need a point guard and don't have one right now.
Do you think there's any possibility, Brennan, that the Suns kind of punt this entire situation and just wait till February? Because every single person I've been talking to from the Suns' perspective continues to say, especially from Miami's point of view, even from Boston's point of view, as to their podcast, they think that the trade deadline's more realistic. So if the Heat are out of it in January, if the Celtics really don't need Terry Rozier anymore, they don't need him until January or February when they possibly move him. They don't want to move him now. So what kind of a predicament is Ryan McDonough in at this situation? Because it seems like that's kind of the sentiment for a lot of teams right now, where they really don't want to move off one of their key assets right before the season starts.
Yeah, here's how I would frame it. I don't, you know, I think you're right in that a lot of those teams, like the Celtics, come to mind, where I think a lot of it hinges on Kyrie Irving. Maybe we should just start with Terry Rozier after this, but I think the Celtics are waiting on Kyrie Irving to make a decision. They're waiting to see just how their whole team looks at, as a whole, put together for the first time with all the pieces that they now have. So I think that's a team where it might not even happen. You know, Rozier might never get traded if they never feel confident enough in Irving as a long-term piece, if they're not sure what he'll do. And the same could be said of a few different people. Kemba Walker, you know, they don't know. They probably in Charlotte still want to re-sign him. And so if they feel like they have any sort of chance of doing that, I think they might be hesitant to trade him. What I would say is that what happened when the Suns traded Brandon Knight, to me, is that it just became more urgent and likely that they make one of the trades that I had been angry at them for not making throughout the entire rest of the offseason, that being just a depth piece, probably somebody who will start now knowing how the rotation shook out, but just a reliable player who's going to be able to give you 30 minutes a night and just do his job. That should have happened before the Brandon Knight trade, even to provide depth on top of Knight. Now without Knight, it's even more, it just has to happen. And so I think some of these names we got to were more along those lines. I think that's more likely, and that stuff can happen, I think, before February. I don't think you know, Corey Joseph or Spencer Dinwiddie is so make or break for the team's long-term plans over Patrick Beverley that they would be, you know, too hesitant to part ways in September rather than February.
Now let's start through these deals like you mentioned there. We're going to go with Terry Rozier first. Then we're going to go just straight down the list of what we have to put together between Kemba, Corey Joseph, Beverley, and Dinwiddie as well. So Terry Rozier, you're calling up. You're in Ryan Bedena's shoes for the scenario, as you will be for these other four. You're dialing up Boston, Brendan, and you want Terry Rozier.
One. Man, I thought I was doing the other teams.
Oh, you are? Okay. I guess from my point of view, I would offer up, obviously I want Terry Rozier because I think he's one of the better overall young pieces involved in this list that you put together. And looking at his stats here, if we want to go through that really quickly, he shot 38% from three last year. He's a very good defender. And even in the playoffs, he did way better. He shot 35% on eight threes per game, 16.5 points, six assists, five rebounds per game. That screams starter equity to me. So I would offer up, I don't know if Danny Ainge would accept this offer, but if they want Rozier this badly, I would go Dragan Bender and then one of Okobo or D'Anthony Melton for Terry Rozier.
Yeah, no, I just think from the Celtics perspective, well, first of all, let's do this with each of these guys too. How available do you think Rozier is on a scale of 1 to 5 to kind of put things in perspective?
I would say
one being he's not getting traded and five being he'll be out of here in no time.
I would say 3. I think they have a position where they don't have to trade Rozier now, but I think there's a point where they probably will have to because I can't see them because they also gave Marcus Smart an extension eerily similar to TJ Warren's contract numbers this past summer. So they have their backup point guard looks like in place with Marcus Smart, but it depends on what happens with Kyrie and Terry Rozier. So I would say if Kyrie stays, that Rozier is going to walk in free agency and someone's going to offer him a big contract. So I would say if they want to get ahead of that, I would say 3 out of 5. What would you think?
I think 2. I think maybe in February if Kyrie stays healthy, if, you know, Hayward. Like, the thing about the Celtics is I don't think Smart is a backup point guard, but I also think they have so much secondary ball handling with some of their other players from Jason Tatum to Gordon Hayward to Al Horford that they can afford to not necessarily have, like, an ideal backup point guard. Plus, with Brad Stevens, they have guys that come out of nowhere and can handle the ball a little bit every year. So I think they do want to get value, but I just don't think they're in too much of a hurry. And, you know, they're at that point in their construction. They're not going to be able to win every negotiation anymore. Like, they're going to have to face the reality of maybe you just lose Terry Rozier. I mean, that's disappointing, and, you know, but it's also just a reality of you have so much talent that some of those guys get lost by the wayside. I just don't think for this year they are going to be better with Rozier, and so I think you kind of just move forward without him. But that said, I think there is a deal that could get done if the value is high enough. So, I mean, I'm wanting a pretty high caliber young player or a pretty high caliber pick if I'm parting ways with a guy you just told, you know, you just said is a starter, you know, starter level player at least.
What if I added then the Suns 2019 first round pick, but I put the same protections on it that I did with the Goran Dragic trade?
So it's Melton, Bender, and
lottery protected Suns first.
Lottery protected? How about unprotected?
Ooh.
2019.
That's tough. I don't know if I would. That's tough. I really think.
How about 1 to 7 protected?
I would do that.
Okay.
I would do that just because you're not giving up much in Dragan Bender. You have to get, if you're getting someone of Rozier's value, you have to give up some sort of piece of young core. I think the Celtics, I imagine in your scenario, Brendan, would, if you were in Danny Ainge's shoes, you would be at least clamoring for one of Jackson or Mikal Bridges, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think definitely. What complicates it so much with negotiating from the Celtics' perspective is that just became, if we were to do that deal, the 5th first-round pick that they could get in 2019. That's just untenable from their perspective. They're not going to draft 5 rookies. There's really no deal that anyone does that includes 5 first-round picks. So it's a little bit
Anthony Davis, maybe?
To even know. What'd you say?
Anthony Davis, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, sure, but, like, that's not going to be 5 first-round picks. That's ridiculous. So, I don't know. I mean, would you do Josh Jackson, Melton, Bender, or Jackson?
Oh, man. I personally not. I know some people get a little angry about that, but I think Josh Jackson still has some really high potential. I still believe in Mikal Bridges. I think they're the long-term 3-4 answer in the front court next to DeAndre Ayton. So I would say no, and I would if it just comes to Jackson and they won't do anything else, I would just say thanks but no thanks and move on. And just wait till next summer to get Rozier at like a 10 to 15 million per year figure.
Yeah, the other thing is the Celtics have 15 guaranteed contracts on their roster already, plus 3 non-guaranteed guys. So it makes it a little bit tough too from their perspective. They wouldn't probably do a trade where they're adding 3 players, but I think they might do something with Bender and Melton. So, you know, Melton could even be like a 2-way guy potentially. I think he's better than that, but you know, you could do that if you needed to get creative. But no. do you want to lock in that Melton Bender Suns pick just as a, you know, some sort of example?
Yeah, sure. We can probably do that for all of them if you wanted to. We can lock that in. And before I move on to our next one, Brent, I just wanted to ask, what do you think is the realistic figure for a guy like Terry Rozier this summer? Because if he doesn't get traded by Boston, which I don't think, honestly, he will at this point, they don't really need to trade him. What do you think his number is next summer in free agency as a restricted free agent? Because I could see the Suns offer him a big offer, but how high do you think it could go?
I think he's going to benefit from having so many point guards be free agents next year. There was really no market at all this summer, and so no one really got paid. But you know, there really wasn't even anyone to get paid except Marcus Smart got a nice deal. Again, he's not quite a point guard in the same way Rozier is. So, I think Rozier probably gets a little bit more than Smart, but I'm not even positive of that. I think that it depends on how well he does this year. What do you think?
I think something around 12 to 14 million a year makes sense for him. But like you said, I think it depends on what happens this year. It could go down to like 10 million per year if he doesn't, because that could some teams could consider that being a mirage a little bit, that playoff performance, but I don't, obviously. But yeah. What do you think about just overall Rozier and Booker as a fit in the backcourt? Because that screams to me like something McDonough would target right away, because Rozier is only 24, going to be 25. Fits right into their timeline.
Yeah, he's a little small for who I would want to play next to Booker. I want someone who's able to defend multiple positions at point guard, be able to protect Booker a little bit better on that end. But I think Rozier he fits really well on offense, somebody who can knock down a shot but also create offense for the team. He hustles on defense. It's not like he's inept. It's just he's a little bit small and, small in size and height. So that would worry me, but, there's no amazing perfect fit, so I think Rozier is one of the better ones available, or that could be realistically available.
All right, so we have Terry Rozier locked in for Melton Bender and a top 7 protected Suns first, which I think makes some sense on both sides. Might be a little heavy for the Suns' perspective when he could be a free agent next summer, but if they're in a desperate mode, I think they could get it done. So moving on here to Kemba Walker, he's obviously the biggest name on the list here. What would it take? I'm Ryan McDonough dialing up Mitch Kupchak right now. What do you want from my roster? Because it seems like, obviously, I need a veteran star point guard to take this roster a step further in their development. But it seems like your roster is in the position where you have really no young assets and you have really nothing to build around Kemba. So is it time for you to hit the reset button?
I mean, I think realistically it is, but it's tough to tell from their perspective what really is going on. But so they would want to get off Nicholas Batum. Is there any deal we could do where Batum and Kemba would go back? Is there even anything reasonable that could go there?
I would say no way.
Yeah, I agree. Especially after that Ryan Anderson deal. They're basically eliminating their cap space for next year if they take Batum. The Suns would be.
Can you stretch multiple guys, though? I mean, I imagine that's kind of a bad idea, but couldn't they stretch Anderson and Batum and get off some relief but then really be screwed later on?
Yeah, you can. I'm pretty sure you can stretch as many guys as you need to, but yeah, I mean, at that point, you're just handicapping yourself so much. It's not the greatest. Yeah, okay, well then, if we can't get off Batum, then I'm going to need quite a bit to get it done. I mean, this is the guy who is a top scorer in franchise history and hasn't even really publicly said that he necessarily wants to leave Charlotte, so if I'm trading him, it's going to have to be pretty huge. How about... Is Josh Jackson on the table in the discussion?
He could be.
Okay, and Mikal Bridges, same. If we do something that works,
if it if it If it's something that I like to the point where I have to pounce on it, yeah.
Okay, well, I think Charlotte probably likes Mikhail a little bit more, just considering they already have Michael Kidd-Gilchrist on the roster. So, could I get Mikhail and a first-round pick? Oh. Not necessarily the Suns, but, like, Mikhail and the Charlotte pick? Or, I'm sorry, the Milwaukee pick. Sorry.
I would say no, to be honest, because we just gave up the future 2020 Miami pick, which is always our most valued asset for Mikhail Bridges. So we believe he isn't a long-term part of our future. But if I took back one of these contracts, Brendan, and someone like a Marvin Williams, would your asking price go down a little bit?
They signed the worst contracts ever. They gave everybody a player option that wanted one. It's a disaster. Yeah, I think if you were to take Marvin Williams, I didn't realize that was a player option on the second year. I thought that was he was a free agent after this year. So, you know, he still has 2 years. Yeah, I would. If you did something like, you know, Tyson Chandler and, you know, I don't know how to get the salary up to it, but I know the Suns have plenty of options. But something centered around Tyson Chandler and Bridges for Kemba and Williams, I think that could be the construction of a deal. Does that – I mean, I think we have the Suns probably have to include something else.
Let me counter really quickly, because I'm still on the fence about moving Mikhail or Josh, because I'm really high on their future. So let me counter really quickly and see what your thoughts are on this one. It's Tyson Chandler, the expiring contract of Darrell Arthur, either of Elia Kobo or D'Anthony Melo, whichever one you want, plus the Suns first-round pick, plus the Bucks first-round pick for Kemba Walker and Marvin Williams.
Chandler, Arthur, Melton, Okobo, and two firsts?
Yeah, two firsts. And I'll throw just a really light protection on the Suns pick. I'll make a top three protected.
Okay. So from the Hornets' perspective, they probably would keep Tyson just to have, I don't know, another center. They have like five, but sure, they probably would keep him. Probably by stretch out Arthur, that cuts their salary by quite a bit for this year, and then they get three assets. I think I would do that deal. That's a pretty good one. You think that those two firsts are less valuable than Bridges?
I just think McDonough at this point, it seems like he's committed so much into his assets with Mikhail Bridges that I can't see him being one of his guys that gets moved, unless it's a deal like a Damian Lillard type.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I just think a lot of teams are going to want that. To me, it's like we saw that with the Kyrie Irving negotiations. That had to be a part of the deal. Otherwise, it wasn't going to get done. And then ultimately, it just didn't get done. I would hate for that hesitancy to cost them a point guard if they need one, like they obviously do. But I think you're right. I mean, I've for sure the Milwaukee pick, he's going to be more likely to deal before he gets to the really deep stuff in the trigger chest.
Now, on that deal that we kind of agree upon there, which is Tyson, Darrell Arthur, D'Anthony Melton, Bucks pick, Suns pick in 2019 for Marvin Williams and Kemba Walker, another scenario is the same with Terry Rozier here. Would you rather pay this price for Kemba, or just bouncing off the GM hat here, taking off for a second, would you rather do this deal now, or would you rather just take the risk and wait till Kemba's an unrestricted free agent and then offer him a max contract?
Speaking for like myself, I would not do this deal. But the Suns have handicapped themselves to the point where I could see them being that. I don't know if they would trade two first-round picks. I think, to me, I actually wonder if they might be more, maybe not Bridges, but I think they might be more, in my opinion, I think they might actually be more willing to trade Jackson than to trade two firsts. I think, to me, I don't know what they think, but I kind of feel like Bridges has a little bit – I'm more optimistic about him long-term than I am Jackson. I would offer Jackson before I would offer Bridges. And I think if the Hornets wanted him, which, like I said, they have Kidd-Gilchrist, I don't know if that's a guy that really prevents you from acquiring somebody as talented as Josh Jackson. It's not like Kidd-Gilchrist is a superstar that you can't play somebody in front of, but – if the Hornets wanted Jackson, I think I might do that. Similar construction, but with Jackson instead of those two firsts. And then I would do it. But otherwise, I would probably wait and just try to sign him if it got to the point where you're offering multiple firsts.
Now, let's say they did do Josh Jackson here. What's your thoughts on both Jackson and TJ Warren? Because I can't imagine. I've been thinking about this more and more every day. But TJ Warren's long-term contract, unless it's a team like Cleveland that specifically needs a wing that has really almost none available, I can't see TJ garnering any trade value, and it might have to be Josh Jackson.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I definitely, Jackson has probably twice as much trade value in my mind, being on a cheaper contract, being younger, having more, you know, even just being a higher draft pick, having more, you know, equity when he came into the league. So I think by far he is more valuable. I think the only real reason that Warren would go to in a certain deal is if the money had to work and it was really the only way that it was going to happen, or a situation like some of these guys. We should actually probably move on to George Hill, because I think TJ might actually be somebody who could make sense for the Pacers. In a deal, like I was just going to say, if somebody's just not talented, not valuable enough, like Corey Joseph or George Hill, that, you know, those guys aren't getting traded for Josh Jackson. But how available do you think Corey Joseph is on a scale of 1 to 5, with their kind of point guard logjam a little bit and wanting to play Victor Oladipo there a little more probably as well?
I would say 4.5.
Okay.
What do you think?
Yeah, I think he's somebody that could, you know, to me, like looking up and down, what kind of team would have any reason to be making a deal this late in the summer? And to me, it's like they drafted Aaron Holiday, obviously, this summer, and then they signed Tyreke Evans, but they still have the whole entire point guard rotation from last year. They guaranteed Darren Collison's deal, who didn't have much of a guarantee at all this year, if any. And then, you know, like I said, Victor Oladipo is incredible with the ball in his hands. So they have like five guys that maybe they don't want to play Holiday at all, but they have five guys who are ball handlers on this team that are, you know, pretty good. So I think that that is the kind of situation where some team could, the Pacers could look at it and think, well, you know, if we could get something for this guy, why not? And, you know, we don't need Corey Joseph to be, he's not going to, you know, really dictate the outcome of our season at all. If we can get an asset in return, then why not?
I think this could be a really quick and easy negotiation for you, Kevin Pritchard, since you're in the GM position over there. TJ Warren plus the Suns 2019 second round pick for Corey Joseph and the Pacers first round pick.
I'm not offering first round pick.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm not in a hurry to get off Joseph. Like I just said, I mean, they have a, you know, they would love to move him if they can get something, but now we're talking about giving something. I don't think I'm doing that. If you wanted, like, does TJ Leaf have any value to you? He was a first round pick, probably the guy that was the least popular first round pick in that draft, but he did get picked in the first round.
If that's what it takes, I mean, I guess I would have to at this point. But let me see what the Suns roster is sitting at.
I mean, I kind of think, the Pacers have enough cap space for it to, oh, they don't have any. Okay, never mind. I was going to say, can they just do TJ in the second for Joseph straight up? And they can't.
According to the trade machine, they could if they wanted to.
Oh, really?
They could do Joseph for Warren straight up.
I would do that.
Okay. Just no picks involved?
Is that enough value for the Suns, though? I mean, all they're getting is Joseph, and they're getting rid of their second and TJ, who, I mean, they like. That was a number 14 pick they signed to an extension.
Yeah, I couldn't get back just like a unprotected second rounder next year.
Like a pick swap next year for in the second round?
I prefer just to be just since you're getting your eventual starting small forward for the next couple of years alongside Oladipo, just like a top 40, top 50 pick would be nice.
Yeah, so you're saying basically we just trade seconds. So I would send you the Pacers second, you would send the Suns second.
Oh, no, I want an additional second.
Oh, I see. I don't think so.
Oof.
I would do Leaf. I would probably do, I don't know, there's really nothing at the bottom of the roster, but I would do Leaf, I think.
All right, yeah. If I want to get off TJ's deal, sure, I'll do that.
You could decline TJ Leaf's third year option if you really wanted to.
And I think I'm going to do that.
Two guys named TJ in this deal. But
so the deal is no picks involved. TJ Warren for Corey Joseph and TJ Leaf. I will be declining TJ Leaf's team option. He's not part of my future. but he uses some sort of value to get back for TJ Warren's long-term deal. So the Suns get immediate salary relief in that deal. So
you can kind of flip Leaf again. I mean, he's going to be on the team for this year. This is only his second season. So, you know, he's somebody that could be in a future deal too.
Yeah, and maybe for at least a year, he could learn behind Ryan Anderson, try to be a really good stretch four. But I like that deal. So let's move on here to our next team on the list, and that is Patrick Beverley, Los Angeles Clippers. There is some movement out there, Brandon, about a possible deal with Los Angeles happening here soon, because we could think that they just matched Tyron Wallace's contract with the Pelicans. They threw him a two-year offer sheet. They matched it. So now the Clippers have 17 roster spots. They have to cut two guys. I've seen some indicators from at least Clippers writers that it won't involve either one of Milos Teodosic or Patrick Beverley. They think they're just going to cut Juwan Evans and Wesley Johnson. But it could be possible they could get Patrick Beverley in such a deal. So 1 through 5, how would you rate Beverley being available for the Clippers?
I mean, to me, it's like a 5. I think it's even more of an urgency because of that roster crunch. I know, I understand from the Clippers' perspective that, you know, there's a lot of expiring deals on this team, and so it's really just picking who they don't want to be on the roster. It's that simple. So, I mean, I understand why they might not need to trade Patrick Beverley. I don't necessarily think that they need to, but I think they surely want to, and he's similar to what I just walked through with the Pacers. Like, if you can get an asset back to solve your roster crunch, of course you do it. The other option is to just stretch somebody. Then yeah, you're definitely, or I think they would probably just eat the money because they don't want any money on the books next year, but whatever. It's just a matter of if they can get something for Patrick Beverley, they'd much rather do that than just swallow $6 million in Wesley Johnson's salary. So, and we did this just to remind people too, we did our final mock draft the day of the 2018 draft this past June. We did, I think it was just Beverley for the 31 pick straight up, right?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Do you think his value's gone down? I mean, do you think he is worth the Suns' 2019 second?
I would still do it just because I'm really high on Beverley, and he'd be the perfect guy to mentor Melton and Okobo and be next to Booker for at least a year. They could possibly sign him to a longer-term deal for the cheap. I can't see that happening. But this could be a quick and easy negotiation on this side if you wanted to, Brennan, and it could be the expiring contract of Darrell Arthur plus the Suns' 2019 second-round pick for Patrick Beverley.
Can the Suns just take Beverley back for a second?
Let me check. Suns cannot. They have to send out at least $4 million in salary.
Okay. That's just crappy. I mean, I guess they're getting a second. The Clippers, the cost of doing business in that case. And no one, Daniels doesn't do it, doesn't quite do it for them. Oh, that's bad luck for the Clippers. Yeah, I mean, I guess then it has to be Arthur. So they're just going to eat Arthur's money anyway. But instead of just eating the $6 million or whatever for Wesley Johnson or whoever they would have chosen in that case, they're getting a second and still doing the same thing. So, yeah, I think it's quick and easy. But I think the Clippers don't want players. So they don't want any long-term salary. So it's pretty easy. You get to give them somebody that they can cut, and then you give them a pick. And I think that something like that could work.
Now, before we go into our last one, which is Spencer Dinwiddie of Brooklyn, what's your overall thoughts on the possibility of adding a guy like Patrick Beverley next to Devin Booker? Because it seems like all indications are with signing Trevor Ariza, then trading for Ryan Anderson to get De'Anthony Melton, who could be kind of a Beverley 2.0 down the line. They are kind of building their scheme in Houston-esque ways that's kind of hard to ignore.
Yeah, I really like the investment for 1 year. If they were able to get somebody like Beverley, you know, I wrote that big piece, not really big piece. I wrote a piece on the Suns training staff with Knight when I thought he was going to be the Suns point guard this year, and just kind of, oh, well, now the training staff's kind of back under the spotlight. And Isaiah Cannon is another example. They, you know, were obligated under the CBA to rehab him and that knee injury that he suffered. So it was kind of two stories at the point guard position that were running in parallel to show that the training staff was kind of under the microscope again. I still feel like I trust them. And so you get a guy like Beverley, and hopefully, you think that can make a difference in his career. He's somebody who's struggled, obviously, quite a bit with injury throughout his career. He's, you know, never played more than 70 games once and played only 11 last year with two different injuries, or maybe re-injured the same thing. I can't quite remember. But for 1 year, I think that's a perfect investment, because if he works out for even just 1 year, then that's a pretty solid point guard option. And if he does, you know, then you have the option of, you're kind of in the driver's seat to sign him long term, or, you know, to any kind of deal that you might want. And he's perfect for what the, you know, you're not going to have to play differently. I heard somebody saying that about, I don't remember who I was talking to. I think it was Josh Lloyd of the fantasy podcast. And he was saying like how nice it'll be for if the Suns were to play Rashawn Holmes more this year, to not have to play differently when DeAndre Ayton leaves the game, not to get on too far of a tangent, but I think that would help for Beverly with putting him in the starting lineup. You don't have to play differently when the backups come in. If Devin Booker is the starting point guard, which I don't think either one of us think it will happen, but if he is, you're going to have to reinvent the offense every time he leaves the floor. If Shaq Harrison's the backup point guard, that's a completely different offense. So to have Beverly in and then have Melton or Shaq backing him up, I think you're going to play a similar style, and I think that would be really helpful.
I totally agree with you there. I think Beverly's one of the most realistic options on the list here, but let's go to our last one there, and it's Spencer Dinwiddie of the Brooklyn Nets. Kind of an underrated guy, very good at not turning the ball over. He's very tall, 6'6", fits the mold around Devin Booker. Good defender, good shooter. He could become a better shooter with some more development. So what would it take from Sean Marks' point of view in Brooklyn to get off of a guy like Spencer Dinwiddie? Because he is coming up with a decision here between D'Lo or Dinwiddie.
Yeah, I think it's another thing. I mean, how likely would you or how available would you say Dinwiddie is? I don't think they're in a hurry to trade him because, you know, you can pick between these two point guards. That's a luxury most teams don't have. But at the same time, you probably do eventually have to pick.
I would say 2 out of 5.
Yeah, I think I said 3 when we were talking before, so I would probably still say 3. I think that some of the Dave King likes to talk about how much of an attitude problem Dinwiddie has. I think that's an outdated impression of him. I think that is one, though, that still kind of exists throughout the league. People should go read Zach Lowe's thing on Dinwiddie, though, talk about how much of a relationship him and Kenny Atkinson have formed. But I think D'Angelo Russell obviously is in the, you know, in the driver's seat for who they would pick. He's a former number 2 overall pick, somebody who has a ton of talent. So I think if you had to pick right now, you'd probably pick Russell, but that could change if he continues to underperform and Dinwiddie continues to play like a madman like he did last year. So I don't think they're in a hurry, but if I'm the Nets, I would say, I mean, I think that they're actually one of those teams that's probably fine taking back long-term money. The problem is Dinwiddie makes $1.6 million. There's not really, no, the Suns don't have long-term $1.6 million salary. So it's kind of a problem. I think that at that point, they're probably just looking for picks. I mean, they need to restock their cupboard.
Yeah, I've been trying to figure on Trade Machine what makes the most sense, because if you take back a contract like Troy Daniels, the Nets are over the cap in that situation, so they can't even take a contract back like Troy Daniels or Darrell Arthur without sending back additional salary, which I don't think is going to happen. So it'd have to be a trade involving one of Melton or Okobo. What do you think about that? Would you do straight up Dinwiddie for one of Melton or Okobo?
From the Nets, I think that's kind of just reshuffling the deck. I think I would probably need a pick. It doesn't need to be an amazing pick, maybe a, you know, a long-term future second or something like that. But at that point, you're just the Nets would just be making their backup point guard position worse for this year. That would all, you know, there's no guarantee Okobo is better long-term than Dinwiddie. They already know Dinwiddie's good, and they would just be giving him up for the possibility of Okobo being better. So I would need a little bit more than that to get it done. Maybe like the 2021 Suns second or something, where I don't think the Suns want to give up their second this year and Okobo, but maybe down the line they hope they'll be better and that might work.
I could see McDonough liking Spencer Dinwiddie to the point where he could eventually re-sign him, because I think he'll be a cheap guy. He, like I said, he's a good shooter, good defender, could get better under Igor Kokoschkov. So I'll take out Okobo or Melton in this deal, because I see it on Nets roster that they have 16 guaranteed contracts, including Dinwiddie. So they could get off of Dinwiddie just with picks, it looks like. So what about Dinwiddie straight up for the Bucks 2020 first round pick?
I mean, I think the Nets would take that in a heartbeat, but I don't know if I'd offer that from the Suns. But I mean, you're McDonough.
What about 2019 Suns second?
Yeah, I think that's more likely. But I mean, I think that they would take Okobo. Like, well, you said they have 16. Oh, that's true, and they're all young guys. They don't want to cut any of them.
Yeah, it looks
that's,
like...
That's tough, because half these guys are guys they signed in the past couple of years. The other half are draft picks.
They'd have to cut a guy like Jared Dudley or Damari Carroll and just eat the money.
Yeah. Okay, you're probably right then. They're probably not going to want to take a guy back. So maybe Melton, though, because if he's... Well, we assume he got signed to a deal. We don't know what it is yet, but I guess that does change it then. They can't sign him to like a two-way deal or something. Yeah, I guess it would just have to be a second. I mean, then it would have to be a sooner, much sooner second in my mind. That would have to be the entire value of the deal.
Yeah, I'll do 2019 Suns second with no problem.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. To me, I don't know if the Nets would do that, to be honest. Maybe now I'm rethinking the first round thing. Maybe it would have to get to that point with him showing so much promise and still being so young. How young is he?
I'll check his age real quick. But, I mean, I think you're right there, Brent. I think from Brooklyn's point of view, I think it would have to be the Bucks' first round pick, which I'd be more than happy to do because I'm a Dinwiddie fan.
Okay, 2020 Milwaukee first. We'll lock that one in. That one's kind of interesting. That could be – I didn't realize the Nets contract situation, having so many guys on the books already. That definitely throws a wrench in it, which is just interesting in general because they're a team that I would expect to make some deals this year. And, you know, DeMar Carroll, even Jared Dudley, to not be able to take multiple guys in return for that is just a little bit of a, you know, not too much of a problem, but just something interesting to watch.
Now, one final point before we end today's podcast. Out of these five guys, I'll go through the deals again really quickly. Kemba Walker was for D'Anthony Melton, Tyson Chandler, Darrell Arthur. Top three protected Suns 2019 first-round pick. Milwaukee first 2020, which is kind of a heavy price for a guy like Kemba at this stage, but that's probably what would have to happen, to be honest. So Corey Joseph, Pacers get TJ Leaf and Corey Joseph for TJ Warren and the Suns 2019 second-round pick. Terry Rozier, you get D'Anthony Melton, Dragan Bender, top seven protected 2019 Suns first for Terry Rozier. Patrick Beverley, you get Suns 2019 second-round pick, Darrell Arthur for Patrick Beverley. And then for Spencer Dinwiddie, like we just mentioned there, 2020 Milwaukee first-round pick for Spencer Dinwiddie. So out of those five deals, Brendan, what would you say is your favorite one from the Suns' point of view?
I think it's Corey Joseph. I think that deal, to be able to get Leaf, which is some value, and get off of TJ, it's kind of like what we did with the TJ Warren, or with the, I'm sorry, the George Hill deal, getting off of TJ in that deal, giving up was ended up being Melton, not the pick, but the same type of value, and still get a point guard that's this year a good option and, you know, some more flexibility in the future. I think that's perfect. That's exactly what I've been asking for since, like, July 5th. So I think if they were able to get something like that done, that would be exactly what I would hope for.
That's a really good point. I really feel like at this point, it's so hard to know because I never heard back about D'Anthony Melton from my source. So it's, like you said, it's up in the air about D'Anthony Melton's contract and how the roster is going to look here soon. But one final question before we end today's podcast, Brent. I wanted to ask, just gauging 1 through 5, what's the probability, with 5 being the highest, that the Suns make a trade for a point guard in the next 2.5 weeks before training camp starts?
I'm tempted to just say it's a 5. I mean, Woj basically reported it was going to happen. It seems to all of us like it has to happen. I mean, I don't know. I don't necessarily know who it is, but I feel like there's really no other choice at this point.
Yeah, I really feel like a deal has to happen here for the Suns to really be a team on the rise, because if you're rolling out a rotation of Harrison, Okobo, and Melton, that does not put much faith into winning 30 to 35 games this year. So I think some name like a Corey Joseph or even a Terry Rozier, one of these five names, makes a lot of sense for the Suns this year. But I appreciate you guys listening on today's podcast. We'll be back to you guys on Monday for a new episode. And also wanted to say, if we're in today's podcast, congrats to Steve Nash, George Hill, and Jason Kidd, former Suns, making the NBA Hall of Fame.
Yes, that's the one thing I was going to say when we first started, and I completely forgot. Yeah, that's incredible. We're going to have a bunch of content on Bright Side of the Sun today, looking back at those guys' careers. I'm sure Suns fans have plenty of memories. So instead of worrying about point guards today, after you listen to this podcast, of course, go ahead and, you know, revel in all those awesome memories of when the Suns used to be a fun team, and how much those guys did for this city and all that stuff. It's super fun to remember. And, you know, I'm doing the same today. So congrats to all those players for sure.
Yeah, it's going to be really fun to watch it later today. But we'll be back with you guys on Monday for a new episode.